Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Seth, Lamar Jackson, 147 carries in his rookie year. Of course, he didn't come in until nine games into that year as the starter. Last year, in 15 games, 176 carries, plus whatever he did in the postseason each of those years. 176 carries, that's a lot of carries. I know a lot of them he's really good at sliding and getting out of bounds. 176 carries is a lot of playing with fire when it comes to a guy who's not very big like Lamar Jackson.
He does right, and he does take hits. I think he's smarter than Mike Vick was about taking hits, though.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, like Vic was just too brave for his own good, you know, and he got better at it in spells as he got older, but there were still hits that he would take where you'd wonder, like, why are you doing that to get a first down in the first quarter? Just, you don't need to prove your bravery to anybody. I think Lamar Jackson has better judgment about that. And I also think that they just use him in such a unique fashion. Mm-hmm. I think Greg Roman's the offensive coordinator for the Ravens. He used to be David Carr's quarterbacks coach, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Back with the Houston Texans.
Why didn't he run some RPOs with David Carr back in the day?
Well, I would imagine he wouldn't have had the authority to do it, for one. But also, look, the Texans did some things with their assistant coaches that I just didn't get back in the day. There were guys that had never coached a position in the NFL that all of a sudden, this happens in the NFL a lot, but I just don't quite get it. Like Greg Roman had never coached quarterbacks before. Then all of a sudden, here he is coaching a quarterback in the National Football League. And that's how he cut his teeth on, you know, ruining a couple of my seasons. But I always liked Greg Roman. He was really, really, he wasn't the reason that we weren't good. But he went on, and when he ended up in San Francisco, you know, he hitched his wagon to Jim Harbaugh's star.
Yeah, that's what he did.
And Colin Kaepernick too, and then went to San Francisco, and they brought the pistol formation to the NFL.
Yeah,
and from that point on, Roman has really been an innovator in how to utilize athletic quarterbacks, and he's done a masterful job of it. And when he took that job in Baltimore, I know a lot of people were skeptical of it, and I thought it was absolutely perfect. When you watch the Ravens play football, they use old-school power football that you would have seen in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, but adapt it to using Lamar Jackson as the running back. And the mathematics simply overwhelm the defenses. There's just no way to defend it at times when it's run well and when your quarterback is Lamar Jackson. And that's what makes it so damn scary, is that you obsess so much over how the hell do we stop this vicious rushing attack. Which, by the way, the Ravens' rushing attack by expected points per play, expected points added per play, would have been the sixth best passing attack in the NFL last year.
Wait, hold up. Say that again.
Their rushing attack was better than all but five NFL passing offenses last year. Like, that's how explosive their rushing attack was. It was just that ridiculously explosive. And then you got to also, by the way, try to defend the pass. Yeah. So it just creates such a headache for defenses. And I think this year, I think Lamar has taken a step forward based on just week one, where he's always going to have some accuracy issues where he's not going to be – I doubt he's ever going to be a laser pinpoint passer. But he's working that offense and that scheme so well that at times he can have an errant throw because guys are wide ass open because of everything the teams are worried about with Lamar Jackson. So they're just as scary as they were last year. You just got to be completely focused and dialed in to beat these guys.
Well, Seth, they do such a good job of finding the perfect skill guys to go with Lamar Jackson too.
Yeah.
They have used their draft equity perfectly the last couple of years. They used a first-round pick on Hollywood Brown, who doesn't get a ton of targets, but he is the perfect deep threat. You know, I don't know how many catches he had against the Browns on Sunday, but he had a massive game-changing early in the game 47-yard catch to flip field position. He plays that role for them perfectly. They got Mark Andrews in the third round. By the way, they got Mark Andrews in the third round of a draft where the Texans 9 picks earlier had taken Martinez Rankin. Go chew on that for a little while, Texan fans. They got Mark Andrews in the third round. They drafted J.K. Dobbins in the second round this past year. He has 2 touchdowns in the first week that he gets on the field for the Ravens. They do such a good job of finding the puzzle pieces to fit in with Lamar Jackson.
Sean, can I interest you in another offseason acquisition and perhaps compare it to some of the Texans' spending in the offseason?
Sure.
I think the best defensive player that the Ravens had this past weekend was Calais Campbell. Calais Campbell was obtained for a 5th-round pick.
I was going to say, did they trade 2 first-rounders for him? That seems to be the going rate for impactful players.
A fifth-round pick, right. No, and they didn't trade DeAndre Hopkins for him, the equivalent of DeAndre Hopkins, to get Calais Campbell. And then they gave him a deal he's a $10 million cap hit this year. You know, David Johnson.
$3.5 million less than Whitney Mercilus.
Yeah, or David Johnson, or perhaps, I know Randall Cobb's cap hit isn't as high, but he averages $9 million per year, and he was the best defense. He started off the first series. Calais Campbell, defensive lineman, intercepted Baker Mayfield on the first series. So that's the kind of stuff the Ravens do. They make really smart decisions in the draft. They're very, very careful about what they do in free agency. The exorbitant spending that O'Brien spent on mediocre players in the offseason is the thing that ultimately will be, if this team doesn't make it, it's going to be, it's not that you couldn't pay DeAndre Hopkins, because you can't say that they couldn't pay DeAndre Hopkins when you turned around and spent exorbitant contracts on mediocre football players that are not as of yet contributing to your football team.
Yeah, I would add Marcus Peters, another guy that they got from the Rams.
No. Yeah, not smart, tough, dependable, Sean.
Yeah, well, that's where I wanted to.
No, the Ravens shouldn't have taken him.
Yeah,
tough, smart.
That's where I wanted to go with this is that, Calais Campbell for a 5th-round pick, we know why he went for a 5th-round pick. He's an older player. Even though he's productive, he's an older player. Marcus Peters went to the Ravens in exchange for Kenny Young, a linebacker, and who I have no idea who he is. Kenny Young could walk in the building here. I'd be like, who are you? And he'd say, Kenny Young. I'd be like, you're acting like you're somebody, Kenny Young. Who are you? They got Marcus Peters for nothing. Seth, he became a first-team All-Pro, and they signed him into an extension. And I know the Texans have tried to do some of this with these former first-round picks who may have fallen out of favor for whatever reason with, like, Vernon Hargraves and Gary and Conley. P.J. Hall is another one. But these are guys who have fallen out of favor more for playing reasons than for character reasons. Marcus Peters is a shutdown corner, and I tell you what, at some point, this team starts out 0-4. If this team starts out 2-6, if we get to a season where it's December and this team is 4-9 or 5-10, I'm going to be really tired of hearing how great all these guys are. I'm going to be really tired of hearing how much fun they are to coach. I'm going to be really tired of hearing what a room full of good guys it is. Part of having good guys and having good leaders means that you can take on some Marcus Peters in your locker room, means that you can take on some risky guys for whatever reason they're. I'm not saying bring in criminals, violent criminals and things like that. What I am saying is that not everybody needs to be perfect and not everybody needs to be your vision of DTS. It's okay that they are GAF also, good at football.
Well, that's right. We should start just doing that, the GAF metric.
Right.
GAF, I want a few guys that are really high on the GAF, but maybe a little weak on the DTS. This is the problem with Jack Easterby, potentially, if it doesn't work out, is that Jack Easterby was a culture coach. And it's kind of the old saying, you know, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. You know, when all you have is, when your only hammer is culture, then all of a sudden everything looks like a culture issue and everything can be saved and cured by culture. And that, in my view, is a flawed worldview when it comes to the way the NFL operates. Yeah. You can't have everybody be a round peg that fits into the round hole. Like, sometimes talent trumps everything. And at any level of coaching, sometimes when you start thinking it's more about your ability or your philosophy or scheme more than just the talent of the players, you've probably gone a little too far over to the dark side. So, yeah, that's what I worry about. I look at the Ravens. By the way, remember the guy, the fifth-round pick that they traded for Calais Campbell, do you remember how they got that fifth-round pick, the Ravens did?
Oh,
they traded a kicker, that Kari Vedvik fella, to the Vikings, and I think the Vikings got rid of him like 2 weeks later.
That is a front office, man. I mean, that is a franchise right there. That's a franchise that's a culture, okay? I mean, that's a culture. I think that's a culture of things that fans care about the most. That's a culture where, by hook or by crook, that defense is always going to be good. They always find a way to be good defensively. They always find a way to get just the right role players on that team. I don't care if it's Ozzie Newsome picking the players or whoever's running things now. I don't care if it's the defense from Brian Billick's years there or the latter-day John Harbaugh years. That is a franchise that's always good defensively and always is good at finding guys in the middle rounds of the draft.
You know what? You know what little thing I like to do, Sean? Sometimes I like to experiment with this in my mind. I think of players that Bill Belichick has loved, and then I think, okay, which of Bill Belichick's disciples would actually have kept this guy on their roster? So, like, I think of, okay, the number one all-time would be Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor is Bill Belichick's favorite player. I can't think of a Bill Belichick disciple that wouldn't have traded Lawrence Taylor away for a third-round pick because he was a culture issue.
Yep.
I think that Patricia couldn't have handled him. I think Pioli wouldn't have been able to handle him. I think the only Belichick disciple that maybe could have handled having Lawrence Taylor on his team is, what's his name there in Atlanta, the general manager?
Dimitroff?
Dimitroff.
Yeah.
And he's not...
Oh, no, or Pioli, you mean?
No, Dimitroff.
Dimitroff, okay, yeah.
Yeah, he's not really a disciple because his dad was in the NFL forever, but he worked forever for Belichick.
I know Pioli was
Jack Easterby.
Yeah, I know Pioli was in the building certainly. In Atlanta at one point, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think he still is as assistant. Sort of. Yeah. Jack Easterby would certainly not like Lawrence Taylor to be on the Texans roster.
No.
Because, you know, yeah, no. He's not a yes sir, no sir type of guy. Can't have guys like that and expect to win championships.
David Johnson. Speak of the devil, said something that encouraged Seth in his media session yesterday while also kind of making Seth angry. We'll get to that next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. Appreciate you tuning in here on Sports Radio 610. Texans Ravens on Sunday. Get things started. 3:25 kickoff. Seth and I have got the Texans countdown to kickoff at 12:25. Clint Sterner and I will have the postgame show for you following what we hope and pray is a successful Texans performance on Sunday. This past Thursday, not successful. They lose to the Kansas City Chiefs 34-20 in Kansas City. David Johnson, one of the newest Texans, statistically had a pretty good day. Scored a 19-yard touchdown that gave the Texans their only lead, 7-0 early in that game. Had 77 yards on the ground. Had another 30-something through the air. Looked healthy. Looked good. His jump cut was nice. We'll see how it goes when he's running against boxes that have more than six guys in them, but for now, I would say a decent performance to start off, at least statistically. David Johnson was asked about his performance in this past Thursday's game, and here's part of his evaluation.
I think to myself, I still had a couple more yards I left on the field, and I just got to improve on that aspect. And then just in the passing game, a couple of routes I wish I could have got back where Deshaun was looking for me, and I just ran the wrong route. So continue to correct those mistakes and building from that.
Seth, that's one of the things that it's probably hard for even a former player to go watch all 22 and know that guy ran the wrong route there. That guy, I mean, you know, when the ball's thrown in a certain direction and a guy's not there, then it's probably easy to tell that. But who knows how many guys that were the first read and he's not where he's supposed to be. So Deshaun's moving on to read two and read three because there's miscommunication out there.
Well, yeah, and I think that there were times I thought it was pretty evident with the running backs in particular where sometimes it wasn't that Deshaun was inaccurate when he was under duress or in the shorter yardage stuff. It was just that the running back wasn't quite where he expected him to be. And sometimes the rules on the scramble rules or what a guy expects from a player, it's hard to really get that communication down when things are changing on the fly until you spend some time together. So I actually really appreciate David Johnson being that honest about it. I don't think there are a lot of guys that would come out and say, I ran the wrong route a couple times publicly, because they know that they know what could happen. And I'll say, immediately when I first heard it, I was kind of in that mode of still angry about the loss, where my first gut reaction is like, oh, what the hell? You're too old to be running the wrong route. But the truth of the matter is it happens. It just flat out happens. There are two plays in that game that immediately sprung to mind when Deshaun had run like a dummy screen where he went to the left, threw the ball, or pump faked, and Will Fuller acted like he was trying to catch an errant ball. And then when Deshaun turned back to the right, presumably there was somebody that he was supposed to throw the ball to there, but the communication was so out of whack. Deshaun ended up running the ball, and this was in the second quarter. You can remember he ran it out of bounds to the right. But Nick Martin was the only offensive lineman that took off blocking for him. There was nobody to throw the ball to. All the other offensive linemen were still blocking. So I don't know what the hell happened on that play, other than know that something was really, really wrong. The other one was there was a jump pass to David Johnson
early
where the ball
game
was behind. Yeah, like Deshaun was under duress. And in Deshaun, it was a jump pass, but I don't think that it was an errant jump pass. I think that Johnson just started off on a route downfield instead of sitting and waiting for the ball. So he wasn't quite where Deshaun expected him to be. And then maybe there were some other instances in the game. All that little stuff is going to get cleaned up. So I'm optimistic. I'm not making any excuses. I think they certainly could have been sharper than what they were. But that stuff will get cleaned up. I mean, and you multiply some of those things over the course of the game when it's new guys that you're trying to incorporate, new guys that are trying to learn the rules and make snap decisions and adjust the coverages. I think that all just multiplied and you got what was really a herky-jerky offensive performance.
Yeah,
again, I'm not making excuses, but that part needs to get better, and I think it will get better.
Yeah, I mean, Seth, that's what matters now. You know, I feel like Thursday night, certainly, when the loss actually happened, Friday, when you and I are in here on Friday morning, maybe over the weekend, maybe even on a reaction Monday presented by Coors Light yesterday. It's a time to go through the autopsy of that loss. The time now with the Ravens on the schedule is to move forward. And the only thing that matters as relates to the loss to the Chiefs is how fixable are the problems? How fixable are the issues that the Texans had against the Chiefs? And it sounds like what you're saying, at least offensively, is that it's a lot of mental errors that should be fixable. These are things that if they're more focused in their preparation, if they're more focused on the field, if the chemistry is 1 week further along, that these are things that should be. But I don't know if it's going to be good enough to beat the Ravens this weekend. But these are things that should be better and are fixable problems for week two and going forward.
Yeah. And again, I'll cut a little bit of a break to David Johnson, because he's new and because it was, David Johnson himself, he's been honest about just the fact that he's not good in these Zoom meetings. He has to really, like, work. Like, he created flashcards for himself to try to get through it. But some guys are just naturally better at learning by doing as opposed to being in a meeting room. And I think maybe that hurt him a little bit, too. So I think that's going to definitely get better. What I can't excuse are some of the things that happened on the offensive line, because that's just flat-out mental preparation. Some of the missed assignments. Look, Zach Fulton got his butt whooped by a superior defensive lineman. I'll blame general manager William O'Brien for that, and they've got to address that and fix that at some point. They could have perhaps schemed better for it and anticipated it and adjusted to it better, instead of just leaving Zach Fulton on an island all that time against Chris Jones. But that's going to get better. It's frustrating that it wasn't better in week one. Yeah. Like I said, other teams struggled with the quarantine training camp. Other teams did not. The Texans fall into that category of they did not figure out how to have these guys mentally ready to go for week one to the point where they could even compete with the Kansas City Chiefs. And that annoys me.
Yeah. They were awesome at keeping the coronavirus out of their locker room, though.
They were I almost wonder if yeah, you know what? I don't want to say this, but now I feel like I have to because the thought popped into my head. I wonder if being so good at and thorough at the coronavirus preparations hurt their actual football preparation a little bit. Just because, look, we know there were other teams out there that were sloppier with it. We've heard the stories. Like, Texans guys have talked about how guys on other teams said that they weren't doing nearly as much, and maybe that had a football benefit to it. You know, more actual face-to-face close contact, more walkthroughs, more whatever. And I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong choice there. It just it might have ended up with the Texans being a little sloppy.
More normalcy, you know what I mean? Other teams may have had a more normal training camp, you know?
Well, and those other teams don't have any COVID issues either. So,
yeah.
I don't want to get into the business of critiquing who was too thorough.
No, I was really only kidding when I said that.
Yeah. No, I know, but that's naturally where it leads, right? Yeah. Like, I don't want to preach against an abundance of caution. And yet, at the same time, maybe the abundance of caution.
Well, we should point out here we are on Tuesday, and in the last two games of the weekend were last night. I would think that, Seth, if there were any COVID issues, testing-wise, positive tests, that we would be hearing about them by the Schefters or the Rappaports of the world by now. In other words, if there had been a certain game that had been played, you know, let's take the Buffalo Jet game from, you know, let's say one player happened to slip through the cracks on one of those teams and he played offensive line. If we all of a sudden heard about six COVID positive cases on the Jets defensive line, and the entire O-line room for Buffalo with the COVID, and now those two teams are in quarantine, yeah, we probably would have heard about that by now. And here we are on Tuesday, and it seems like, knock on wood, it seems like the NFL has done not only a great job of keeping the coronavirus out of the locker room during training camp, but they've carried it into the season to the point where I know the news over the weekend was that there was not a single positive coach or player on the test from Saturday night that had to be, you know, there was not a single positive test as these teams all got ready to take the field on Sunday. All the testing on Saturday, all negative tests for everybody that made the trips to where they were going.
It seems like the advantage that football had over baseball, aside from just having more time to prepare, but on a technology side of things, it seems like football had more rapid response testing and better contact tracing, because they had these Kinexon devices, so that immediately when somebody tests positive, they knew who else to isolate and retest. And a lot of teams were able to go above and beyond with their own individual testing. So kudos to football for figuring it out. You had the head start, obviously, compared to baseball, but it's been pretty cool that so far, knock on wood, it's been a non-issue.
They know exactly, with those Kinexon things, they know exactly who you are spending time inside of a social distance radius at practice. Like, they can tell, that data gets uploaded. I wore one of those at practice. The data gets uploaded. As soon as practice is over, I give the Kinexon chip back, and they upload all the data to the NFL. And the very first day after we wore those Kinexon devices, Seth, we got a text from Texans Media Relation, all of the 10 of us who were in the media who were at practice. We got a text basically saying, you guys need to do better at social distancing. You guys were too close to one another at practice throughout the day.
You know what, Sean? If I'm ever a warden of a POW camp, I'm going to enlist the Kinexon device, because I'll be able to tell who's hatching a plan to tunnel out. I'll be able to tell who's spending a little too much time around each other. Also, the Kinexon device presumably would say, like, hey, by the way, this dude's in a tunnel. That might be an even better use of the Kinexon device.
Right. Boy, that would have been the lamest ending to a movie ever if Shawshank, if Andy Dufresne had a Kinexon device attached to him. Weakest ending ever.
Warden's just sitting there with his pistol as he climbs out of the mud.
Right. He's standing in the brook right at the edge of the property. Just go shoot him. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday here on Sports Radio 610. Is DeAndre Hopkins still hung up on the Texans? That's next. So DeAndre Hopkins had a big week, his first week as a member of the Arizona Cardinals football team, so big that his new head coach recognized him in front of his new teammates following the game.
All right, that's a hell of a job finding a way to win. All right, we built something today. All right, and we got to keep building each week. Because to come out, y'all felt how sloppy it was. Y'all felt how tired we are. Now we just get better and better. All right, now we just get better and better. But couldn't be more proud of the effort and guys sticking together. All right, I want to give a game ball to a new member of our team, had 14 catches, 152 yards.
moment I walked in this building, man, I felt something special about this team. I promise you. I know we got what it takes to get what we want, but it's one day at a time. Let's keep working.
All right, so that was DeAndre Hopkins. That was obviously in the Cardinals locker room. My biggest takeaway from that 40 seconds or so of audio, Seth, is Cliff Kingsbury is a little more lively than I envisioned him being as a head coach in front of a locker room. Like he's got a little pizzazz to him. He always seems he seems so Matthew McConaughey laid back, you know?
Have you never seen him dance?
No.
Like, GIF just searched Cliff Kingsbury dancing with his team. Yeah. Okay. No, he's that's an interesting dude there, the Cliff Kingsbury.
Okay.
He's that doesn't surprise me. I think that Cliff Kingsbury, for one, deserves credit for how he changed and adjusted his offense last year as the season went along. You know, he started off the year trying to do a whole bunch of like, yeah, we're going to be four wide. We're going to do all this stuff that works in the air raid. And he's going to keep that spirit about him, you know, and they're going to spread it out as much as they can. But they NFL-ified that offense as the season went along, and he learned what he could and could not do, as he's also trying to figure out how much his rookie quarterback can handle. And I think they might surprise some people this year with that offense.
Yeah, that's
he's got the downside of playing in a division that has the Seattle Seahawks that all of a sudden discovered how to pass the football.
Yeah, I was just kidding. That division, man. Look, that division, it's 1 week, so I don't want to get too high or too low about really anything that happened in week one, but I already thought that was going to be a pretty good division when you consider the last two Super Bowl teams out of the NFC are both in that division, the Rams and then the 49ers last year. We know the 49ers, they're not going anywhere. They're going to be good again this year. Seattle, as you pointed out, now all of a sudden can throw the football, and they already have one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the game in Russell Wilson. And I thought the Cardinals had a chance to be, and do have a chance to be, a really sneaky team. The Rams looked really good against the Cowboys. The Rams were the one team in that division, Seth, where I go, that's the team. Every division needs a team that's going to go 6-10, 5-11, just because of the math, right?
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time finding a 5-11 team in that division right now. If this is who the Rams are going to be, a team that was pretty damn good defensively against what I think people are expecting to be an explosive offense.
Yeah.
And if Jared Goff can just be efficient and protect the football and that offensive line can hold up, then the Rams have a chance. I'm not saying they're going to win 12 games or anything like that, but there's no patsies in that division. There's no easy outs.
Now that you bring up the Rams, let me say one thing. I have to get this off my chest because this annoyed the hell out of me last night. Okay, so we're talking about the Rams. Aaron Donald obviously has been awesome, but was really, really awesome this weekend. Aaron Donald had a hell of a game. Just absolutely went off. And it made me think of all of the comparisons of Aaron Donald to J.J. Watt. Those two... It's a shame that they weren't playing at the exact same times, because then that really would have been a head-to-head battle. I think, frankly, J.J. is better at some things. J.J. in his prime was better at some things that Aaron Donald is now good at in his prime, and vice versa. I think Aaron Donald's better at some things than prime J.J. Watt. Both incredible football players. But somebody last night, I saw it in a few different places, include one verified blue check. Somebody last night, after T.J. Watt's interception for the Steelers, had to make the point that T.J. Watt is greater than J.J. Watt.
Oh, jeez.
And you're like, okay, now. Like, well, it's okay, so T.J. Watt in his prime is probably better than J.J. Watt as he's in his waning years. It's not the same as, hey, T.J. Watt is better than three-time defensive player of the year, J.J. Watt, which he is not yet better than prime J.J. Watt. He isn't. T.J. Watt's awesome, but he's not as good as J.J. Watt was in his peak.
Well, and wake me up when T.J. Watt comes back from two back surgeries, a traumatic leg injury, and a torn pectoral muscle. Like, J.J. has miles on him now, man. Like, it's
right.
J.J. does not have a garden variety, just sort of regular 9 years of NFL wear and tear. That dude answered the bell every game for the first 5 years and played nearly every play at a position where he was wrestling bears on a down in, down out basis. It's not the same. Seth, Cliff Kingsbury and Bill O'Brien. I want to put this through the Seth Payne smell test here. Cliff Kingsbury talking about DeAndre Hopkins and Bill O'Brien talking about David Johnson. Those are the two principals in the trade that took place this offseason. I want you to tell me which of these two is happier with the guy that they have based on 20 to 25 seconds of innocuous audio. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's Kingsbury on Nuke Hopkins.
Yeah, he's a tremendous talent. I mean, for him to, you know, get his deal done and dive in like that, I think he and Kyle are just going to continue to build a relationship and get on the same page with some stuff. But he's a playmaker. He wants the ball. He's wants to win first and foremost, and you sense that on the sideline. And it's fun to be around. It's fun for our guys to see that type of passion and that type of effort when he's out there.
Sounds dependable, tough, smart to me. Here's Bill O'Brien on David Johnson.
He's a very good player. He's a good runner. He's good in the passing game. I think there's a lot of things that he probably feels like, you know what, I can do this better and that better. You know, he really hadn't played in a long time, just like a lot of guys. But he's a good player. He's big. He's strong. He's a great guy. Awesome guy to coach. Always looking to get better. So, yeah, we're glad we have him.
I'm going to go.
Felt like what you might say about like 50 out of the 53 guys on the team. Is that about right?
Yeah, it's like you just
Kingsbury is very much about like, hey, this guy's a leader. This guy's, you know, this guy has a certain passion about him. All of that. Where David Johnson, it just sounded like the standard. He was dependable, tough, and smart.
Yeah, I was gonna say I was gonna give Kingsbury a notch or two above O'Brien on David Johnson, in part because he used the word fun a few times as well. I feel like if you're fun, then Cliff Kingsbury is gonna like having you around. Because Cliff Kingsbury is fun.
I don't look. This is the problem with this little exercise, Sean. I can't sit here and be like, at this point into Cliff Kingsbury's career, be like, well, you see, a superior coach like Cliff Kingsbury, he gets it. Like, I can't.
You
I can't
could.
Use Cliff Kings-
you'll get ridiculed. You can say anything you want, but you'll get ridiculed if you do.
Look, the big question with Kingsbury, right, is what does the defensive side of the ball do? Isaiah Simmons, pretty impressive in his rookie.
Yeah, that was a nice pick.
The Cardinals. Watch out for the Cardinals. Yeah. I know Vandermeer, when we had Vandermeer on for his once a week hit this offseason, he openly smirked and scoffed at my notion that the Cardinals had a chance to win their division.
Yeah. And they're 1-0 right now. Seth, they're on pace to go
16-0.
Right. Yeah.
I claim victory.
That's right. One game in. All right, let me ask you about this then, Seth, as we continue to look at DeAndre Hopkins' first weekend as a Cardinal. How would you be looking at this if you were J.J. Watt? Chandler Jones tweeted after the game, oh, and we got D-Hop. And then DeAndre Hopkins retweeted him in almost a you two need to get a room kind of fashion, quite honestly. Chandler Jones tweeting, oh, and we got D-Hop. DeAndre Hopkins retweets and says, oh, and we got the best defensive end in the game, three more away from 100 sacks.
Oh, what the hell?
Oh, no, you didn't.
What the hell, DeAndre?
Yeah. If you're J.J. Watt, are you throwing your drink at your computer going, what the hell, man? I thought we were friends. It sure seems like he's taken to Chandler Jones awfully quickly here.
I would try not to take it personally if I were J.J. Watt. I don't know. DeAndre's being accused of throwing shade like with every comment he
I know,
makes,
it's fun.
Including when he said grateful after the Texans got their butts whooped on Thursday night. Some people, I guess he explained it as that he had an appearance on, was it Jimmy Kimmel or the other one? It was the other little white guy.
Jimmy Fallon.
The other
I don't
Jimmy.
Know that he's the other little white guy in late night.
He was one of the little white dudes. Yeah. Well, Jimmy Kimmel used to be a big white dude. Now he's a little white dude.
He's skinny now. Yeah.
So I guess he explained it as like, no, he's saying he's grateful for being on the show. I don't see that as being the kind of thing that DeAndre Hopkins would be grateful for.
No.
I mean, yeah, you want to be grateful for everything, as every self-help book will tell you these days. Yeah. They're all based on being grateful. But I don't know. That doesn't seem like if I were on a guest appearance on some show, I'd say, oh, grateful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what I've spent my whole life looking for. I think that was some shade at the Texans.
Interesting. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday, Sports Radio 610. Bill O'Brien was asked in his press conference about Mike D'Antoni, who he's friendly with. Mike D'Antoni leaving the Rockets for greener pastures.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough. I don't know everything that was going on there. I don't know anything about that organization. I do know that Mike D'Antoni's a great coach. I'm actually friends with him. I'm friends with Jeff Van Gundy, and I respect Jeff Van Gundy's opinion on basketball. And I remember Jeff telling me one time that Mike D'Antoni's one of the smartest basketball coaches he's ever met. You know, stuff. I think he was 100 games over 500. You know, I don't know. You know, in this day and age, it is what it is. I mean, you have to win. You have to – if you don't win a championship, then it is what it is. So, but Mike's a great guy. He's a great person. He used to come visit us up in Greenbrier when we practiced in Greenbrier. He has a place up there. Just a really good guy. His wife's really nice. So all the best to him, and I'm sure he'll he'll have a job here in a heartbeat.
The D'Antonis are DTS. They're DTS.
That's what I was going to say. That's exactly. Boy, we've been indoctrinated, huh? That's exactly what I think now. Anytime anybody talks about anybody, I'm like, yeah, but are they DTS? It sounds like they are.
It sounds like not just Mike, but his wife Laurel is DTS as well. That is a DTS. That is a DTS household. Bill O'Brien, just go ahead and say it. If you're not winning a championship, everybody thinks you're a loser. That's what he wanted to say right there. But he basically jammed "it is what it is" in there instead.
I would think that it was more he was going along the if you don't win a championship, then you're probably going to get fired. But then, you know, he would have had to explain how he still has a job, which I think I don't think the championship or bust philosophy is fair. I do think that there's room to be had for. But now, hey, making it to a conference championship game every now and then, I think that's a pretty good standard.
Yeah, not bad. Okay, so let's play that. Play the subset of that one more time. The part where Bill O'Brien seems to begin lamenting the championship or bust mentality that has taken over the earth.
You know, it's tough. I think he was 100 games over 500. You know, I don't know. You know, in this day and age, it is what it is. I mean, you have to win. You have to – if you don't win a championship, then it is what it is. So,
okay, what do we think? Seth, the possibilities. If you don't win a championship, everybody hates you. If you don't win a championship, you're first loser.
There's always a feeling that he doesn't feel they get the respect they should for having won a bunch of division championships. Yeah. You know, like there's a he can't hold it in sometimes. And I don't know what to say about that other than that, like, yeah, nobody's impressed with division championships. It's cool. It's nice. But I guess, yeah, it's just – I don't think anybody ever has been, really. Is this a new day and age thing? Was it – I know, now back, look, divisions used to be five teams. It was harder to win a division. And maybe the rivalries were a little bit tougher. But I don't remember a time in my youth when people were like, yeah, AFC Central champs, three times running, baby, suck it.
I think – you know, if we're diving into the details of that, the first two that he won were with Brock Osweiler and Brian Hoyer as his quarterbacks. But there
Which
was
is no, impressive.
With, that is impressive, but there were no other good teams in the division. You know what I mean? They were 9-7 both of those years, so those aren't super impressive. And Seth, when you get knocked out of the playoffs at the divisional round at best, and when you get embarrassed, that's the thing. Bill O'Brien's four elimination games from the playoffs have all been embarrassing. He hasn't gotten knocked out in a classic playoff game where you go, phew, a great quarterback just drove it down your throat, down four, they went and got a touchdown at the end of the game and you tip your cap to them. You get knocked out 30-0 at home by the Chiefs. You go up to New England and you get beat by three touchdowns. You get knocked out at home by the Colts in the wild card round. You know, and then what happened last year happened. You know, you give up a 51-7 run in Kansas City. There are two impressions that are the most important ones to make. The first impression and the most recent impression. And every year, the most recent impression going into the offseason for the Texans is a bad one. It's a bad one.
I'd say I think the most impressive playoff performance was actually the Osweiler loss to the Patriots in the playoffs.
That's a fair point. The final score does not indicate that, but given who their quarterback was, if Will Fuller catches that bomb, then maybe we're talking differently about Bill O'Brien and the Texans.
And the Texans played a hell of a defensive game.
They did.
You know, for the first three quarters. And Brady threw up a couple of prayers that easily could have been interceptions. I mean, I'll credit him for – Brady knows where he can throw a prayer up where it's least likely to screw him over. But, yeah, that was actually a good performance. But you're right, it doesn't wash the taste of just those extreme blowouts, and especially at the hands of the Chiefs. There's only so many times you can be embarrassed by the Chiefs before it starts to occupy a place in your brain.
The Texan employee who this week is the most difficult for. Next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.